During the second day of testimony Tuesday, gay rights lawyers continued to call expert witnesses. One historian testified that gays and lesbians had long been victimized by public policies that included laws prohibiting same-sex marriage. Attorneys for proponents of Prop 8 have challenged some of the assertions made by witnesses for the plaintiffs. The trial is expected to last 2 to 3 weeks. For NPR News, I'm Bob Hensley in Modesto, California.
Google is threatening to pull out of China, accusing the communist government of hacking into emails. The world's number one search engine originally agreed to some censorship of its websites, but not anymore. Google says it may shut down its Chinese language Google website, accusing the government of attacking human rights activists using its Gmail service. China says it's seeking more information on Google's statement. I'm Carol Van Dam, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. Bach's Lunch, that's Bach as in the composer, is a monthly noontime concert at the Springer Cultural Center in Champaign. This Friday's program features two young violinists playing Vivaldi, Mozart, and Bach. Daniel and Joshua Melling will join us to play live on the Wednesday edition of Live and Local, along with some adult colleagues. It's Live and Local weekdays from noon to 1 on FM 90.9.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. And we're glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, and Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. From time to time here on the program, we like to do healthcare topics, and we think it's a good idea to give people a chance to ask questions, sometimes general, sometimes specific. And we have a family practice doctor who's here every couple months. And then from time to time, we have people who deal with particular parts, who specialize in particular parts of the body. And we're pleased to have here in the studio with us once again, Dr. Robert Bourne. He's been with us a number of times before. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana, and that means that he deals with the foot, and the ankle stops right there. And if you have foot questions, and when he's here, been here before, we've always gotten lots and lots of questions. If you have questions about your feet, if they're bothering you, you have concerns, you are welcome to call. And he will do his best to help you whenever we have doctors here. The thing I always say is now do keep in mind that because the doctor can't see you, there are limits. We can't really diagnose over the phone, but I think we can help. I'm sure that he can address some basic concerns. And then if you need to go from there, well, you maybe need to go see somebody who can see you. But this is a good place to start. So your questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Also, we're taking emails now. If you want to do it that way, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thanks very much.
Well, it's nice to be back.
For being here. I don't suppose that there's anything in particular about winter as far as feet go that make it different from summer. Is there?
The only thing is skin care, and that's the thing we see quite a bit because of the especially now the dryness that's out there. We get a lot of cracking of the skin, especially around the heels, and these fissures can be a problem because it can be quite painful. It's a lot of times people get around the fingernails and on their hands as well, and they can become a problem with secondary infection in compromised patients, diabetic patients, etc. So we try to tell patients to go ahead and not forget about moisturizing their feet. And it's one of those things that's a maintenance issue. You have to just do it every day and usually twice a day in utilizing a good ointment type of preparation versus any lotions. The lotions usually have a little bit too high alcohol content. They actually can dry the skin out a little bit. The other thing people make the mistake of doing is they say, well, I've got these problems. I'll soak my feet. Well, the soaking actually dries them out more, and so that's more of a problem. So the good... Or even, you know, Vaseline, bag balm, utter balm, things like that to go ahead and place around the heels does a nice job in terms of prevention and even healing those cracks that might be there.
Okay. I sort of wondered if people are wearing, during the wintertime, if they're wearing much heavier kind of shoes, things that are insulated because you want to keep your feet
right.
warm, whether you might actually have some problems related to the fact that then maybe your feet are sweaty and you build up moisture. Maybe your shoes don't get really a chance to kind of dry out like mm-hmm. they should. And I wondered whether you actually could have those kinds of problems in the winter when you might maybe not really think about it.
True. And actually, it's the sweating that tends to cause the dryness. So it's one of the, you know, somebody's foot is in water and it dries out, it's very dry. So when it's actually a little bit more sweaty, then we do have that problem. The other thing is as you mentioned, is having feet that are perspiring and then be exposed to cold. And so we do have also this problem, especially what I'll be seeing probably in the next week or two, is all these complaints where patients come in with very painful toes, with discoloration, purplish, reddish discoloration, and areas that are very painful. And these are related to almost a frostbite condition, where the feet get very cold as a result of the perspiration, loss of insulation, quality of the socks, shoes, et cetera. And then usually maybe 2 or 3 weeks after this exposure is when they come in with the symptoms of pain.
We have a couple of callers here, and we'll get right in it. And they're all in Urbana, and we'll take them in the order that they came in, 1, 2, 3, starting with line number 1 right here. Hello. Their caller there, line 1 in Urbana. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm calling to ask about the fungal infection that you get in your toenails, and I'm just wondering if you can ever get rid of it. I did take Lamisil several years ago, but it cost $10 a pill and ended up costing $900. And so how can you get rid of this stuff?
Well, first I have to ask you, if when you took the Lamisil, did it take care of the problem?
Yes.
But it came back?
Yes.
Okay. That's one of my points, is that I have a feeling that the problem with fungal infections of toenails, is as we're going to find out in the future, is most likely a immune deficiency in patients where they don't really have any natural immunity against the fungi. So even though when you take the medication, it can be effective. And as soon as you stop taking the medicine, then the fungus, which is all over, we get reinfected with the same fungus.
Well, it took several years before it came back.
Correct. And that's usually, if you look at some of the research, the reoccurrence rate after 5 years is close to 100% in patients who take the medicine. Mm. So the problem is that...
Well, I have it in one foot, but I don't have it on the other.
Right. And that's, a lot of times we'll see that. Now, there's some things that may be coming in the future about trying to get rid of the fungus using topical agents. I haven't seen, supposedly they're going to be out this year, but I haven't seen any things that exactly what they are or how they're going to be used. Fungus is probably difficult to kill in because it's certainly different than bacteria in terms of the physiology of the organism. So anything that's toxic to the fungi is usually toxic to us as well. So that's somewhat of a problem. But the other is actually there is a laser therapy that has been under clinical trials, which closed in December. And this was using a dual frequency laser to go ahead and actually kill the fungus underneath the nail plate without killing the tissue at the same time. So this is something that may be very effective in terms of trying to get rid of it. But the problem is it's going to come back. So if it's something that would be easy enough to utilize this technique, then it could be something that could be repeated. So it would certainly be a lot safer than taking the oral medication, mm-hmm. which has some liver side effects.
Right. Okay.
So right now, unfortunately, I don't have anything that would really tend to take care of it. The good thing is...
No creams or anything.
No. The good thing is that it's mostly a cosmetic issue versus anything else.
I know. It looks ugly.
I know.
So, okay. So my only hope is maybe laser therapy in the future.
Or some other medications that might be available topically. We'll have to kind of wait and see.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I guess that also gets to the question, if the stuff that's causing the infection, I mean, if it's just out there in the world, why is it that everybody doesn't
right.
have it?
Right. And as I said, why does everyone who has the infection and it comes back? after they've eradicated it initially. So I think that's probably the most likely cause, is the fact that they just don't have any immunity against it.
Mm, okay. Line two is next in Urbana. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
My 16-year-old son has hammer toes on his, I call them index toes. I don't know if you can have them anyplace else. But I was just wondering, is that something that should be fixed, or what kind of trouble will it cause in the future, or should we just ignore it?
Interesting, because usually 16-year-olds don't have those hammer digit deformities. Was he born with those?
Yes, he was.
Okay, then that could be. And certainly if that's the case and it's not really causing many problems, it's probably not worthwhile to go ahead and do anything with it this time.
Okay.
If it does become an issue, then certainly there's the only thing that straightens out hammer toes is surgery.
What kind of issues would it be?
The only usually issue would be irritation either to the tip of the toe or to the joint right above where you have that flexion contracture deformity. And if you wear a shoe that doesn't have a deep toe box, you can get irritation there and pain.
I was going to say, he does seem to get a blister there more often. If he's getting a blister any place from running or fitting shoes, it gets it on that toe.
Right.
But that's about it.
So if it's something that causes discomfort, then it can be fixed.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Very good. And we will go on here, and I think our next caller in Champaign County. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. We hear you just fine.
Okay. I wanted to ask about ankle pain and I've heard of some new treatments. I've had erratic success with like a steroid injection, but I heard about a supposed replacement for it, which is reduced platelet injection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how widespread that is, and I'm sure the HMOs aren't covering it yet.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you know anything about that? Or?
Right. Yeah, that's something that my partner over at Carhill does quite a bit of. And it's interesting. What they do is basically take the patient's blood and they add some material to it. They spin down the blood in the centrifuge. The material that comes out is a concentration of basically healing elements in the blood itself, and then it's injected back into the patient in these areas. And so it's something that has shown good success in regards to healing some chronic inflammatory conditions. So, you know, that certainly
now,
could be an issue.
Am I correct in understanding that it's like reducing your own natural equivalence?
Correct. And just basically concentrating it.
I see.
So, now, yes.
Another injection thing I had a question about, and that's a synthetic sort of lubricant of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Adding hydro, laurel, whatever that long.
Right, right. That's, you know, is this because of arthritic changes in your ankle or?
Well, it was an acute ankle inversion.
Okay.
I broke it, but I've had a long legacy with it, arthroscopic injections and all sorts of.
Okay.
Things.
Yeah.
Don't like the idea of using the steroids, and most podiatrists won't do it more than twice or three times a year because of the deterioration.
Right. So that,
but, it's a synovial kind of buildup, I guess, as far as they can tell.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are some other things out there that might be helpful, but it would just be on a kind of case-by-case basis.
What can you say generally about that, this idea of injecting a synthetic substance?
Boy, I haven't done any of it myself. It's certainly done in knees quite frequently. I can't see why it wouldn't be also helpful for the ankle as well.
All right, thanks.
All right. Other questions are certainly welcome. Our guest in this hour, Focus 580, is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist, so that means he's a doctor who specializes in the foot and ankle. He works at Carhill Clinic in Urbana, and if you have foot problems, foot care issues, give us a call and he'll see if he can help. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And we also take emails at will-talk@illinois.edu. Just as a quick thing, is there anything that you would want to say or recommend about socks, particularly at this time of year? Like what kind of material do you think maybe would be best?
You know, basically a good wicking material. So it pulls the water away from the skin or perspiration, and so it goes into the sock instead of sitting next to the skin. The smart wool socks are real good to use. There's other options available as well. Cotton usually isn't the best material, so it kind of holds the moisture against the skin. Using absorbent powder is something that's important too. You know, try to keep the feet dry, which goes ahead and maintains the insulation quality. We see this in patients with some vascular conditions, so, you know, Raynaud's disease, things like that. That really tends to crop up. Having problems with their digits in the cold weather, and we've had some pretty nasty cold weather lately, and so that's, again, keeping them warm and dry, and the dryness is important.
Yeah, somewhere I read it just as a general kind of thing, that a general recommendation is that when you're sitting down, it's a good idea to have your feet elevated. Is there anything to that?
Only if you need to elevate them. So if someone has a problem with bad veins and you have peripheral swelling, and then you would need to go ahead and elevate them to try to decrease the amount of swelling that's present. But the problem is you need to elevate above the heart to have it do any good.
Okay.
So it's just like plumbing. If you want the water to run downhill, it's got to be above the pump. So that's why the foot has to be above the heart to have it do any good.
So just putting your feet up is not really going to do very much.
I guess it does a little bit of good, but it won't. It'll just make them swell a little bit slower. Yeah. It won't stop the swelling.
Okay. Let's talk with someone in Terre Haute over in Indiana. Line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question with regard to my mother. She has a lot of problems with the toenails on both of her big toes. She's had surgery on them several times, and the podiatrist has removed a portion of the toenail, but not all of it. And I was just wondering why, since it's a reoccurring problem, why he doesn't go ahead and remove the entire toenail.
I would agree. If it's a situation where the nail is thick, difficult to trim, and painful, then frequently we remove the entire nail. As long as she has is a good candidate for that, good circulation, good ability to heal, no other diseases or complications that would prevent you from doing that, that would be a reasonable thing to do. Toenails themselves don't really provide that much protection for the toe, and certainly a nail that's abnormal is more of a liability than an asset, and certainly the whole nail can be removed.
Is there often a problem with the toenail growing back when it's been removed?
Well, when we remove it, and we remove it in such a way to kill the growth center cells that make the toenail, so the idea would be to remove the nail and prevent it from growing back. So it's usually not very difficult to do that.
Is there any positive reason for leaving a portion of the toenail?
Again, it's a situation where it takes longer to heal if you go ahead and remove the entire nail.
Okay.
So also, if there's no need for, if the other portion of the nail is fine, then usually leave that alone.
I see. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. And I guess I would just think that at least initially that would the tissue that would be under where the nail is would be tender. Does that, if you take the nail away, eventually does that just toughen up so to the point where it's not going to be particularly susceptible to injury, or you're not going to have any problems?
It toughens up fine, and people usually don't complain about any sensitivity after a period of about maybe a month or two.
Okay. Well, certainly other questions here are welcome. Foot-related questions, foot or shoe-related questions. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. And every once in a while, he's here. Like a lot of the folks that we have special area practice, he's here and answers questions. And so whatever is on your mind, if it's foot-related, you are welcome to call 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana where we are. We do also have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, we'll pay for the call. If you use the toll-free number, that's 800-222-9455. On again to someone here at local, and that's line 1 in Champaign. Hello. Is there a caller there, line 1 in Champaign? Go ahead, caller, line 1. Well, okay. Well, I'm not sure what the problem is. It sounds like there actually is somebody there. We'll see if we can get that straightened out. I think we're getting another caller here lined up. Maybe just real generally here, I could ask you to talk a little bit about shoes and about fitting shoes. I would imagine that, you know, a fair amount of problems come because people are wearing shoes that don't fit properly, and particularly if they're pinching or if they're rubbing, not only can that just be uncomfortable, but over the long term, that can lead to problems. Are there particular things that you would say to people about, you know, pay attention to one or two things, mm-hmm. and that'll help?
Boy, you know, it's always amazing to me is how people have no conception of what they're covering, and it'd be nice to have a shoe that looked like a foot.
Yeah,
and that sounds crazy, but you know that's if we had that, then I'd have a lot of less problems. But especially in size, unfortunately nowadays, because of I don't know if it's inventory, trying to reduce costs, manufacturers now just make size in shoes that are just one size. Size 9. If I wear a size 9 and you wear a size 9, we may have vastly different shape of our feet. And so, unfortunately, we are stuck putting both those feet of abnormal shape in that one size. That may not, the shape of that shoe may not fit the shape of your foot at all. Mm-hmm. I have a foot that's very, very square, very wide, wide foot, and I cannot wear just any shoe. I have to wear a 4E shoe. So so the problem is my size 10 has to go ahead and 4E in width has to fit into that general size 10, where somebody who has a 4A, very narrow foot, they're going to fit their foot in that same shoe. So what you have to do is, number one, find someone who will actually measure your feet and then accommodate that size. So people ask me all the time, what's the best shoe to wear? And the best shoe to wear is one that fits your foot.
And it's also true that I think it's true that probably for most people that their 2 feet, they're not the same.
Correct.
They're not the same. They're different. So, you know, one's going to be a little.
Got to fit the biggest one.
So that's what you would do. You'd say, all right, fit the biggest one. So rather be have your shoe be a little on the loose side than too tight.
Certainly. And now if someone has a substantial difference in the size of both feet, then you have to wear two different shoes. Which there are a number of people out there that have that problem. But, yes, you try to – if someone has a, let's say, less than a half size difference, then obviously you try to fit the biggest foot.
Okay. Some more folks here with questions. We'll talk next with someone in Sydney. Line number 2. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What do you recommend for cracked heels?
If the heel itself is cracked – there are some of the things that you can actually do, and that's one of you use super glue in the crack.
Oh, wow. Really?
And people always laugh at that. But and actually now, if you go to the emergency room sometimes, they don't use sutures anymore. They use basically glue the skin back together. It's a similar type of thing. But you can go ahead and do that. It'll join those edges so that the crack is certainly lessened. The other is to actually use... if someone has chronic problems with that, again, it's a problem with loss of moisture in the skin itself. So that's why we like to use the emollients that are very high in ointment content versus anything else. So Vaseline, as we said before, bag balm, A&D ointment, any of these things that actually trap the moisture in the skin and prevent it from evaporating is helpful. Third thing is actually using a wax compound. It's the same thing as when you take a replace toilets. It's the wax ring that's used to put over the plumbing portion to seal off the bottom of the toilet, and so it's called a wax ring. That wax that you use, you can put on the area of the heel to seal the crack, and that will go ahead and help heal it as well. It's one of the dermatologists that gave me that because they use that on fingers that tend to crack, and it works very well on the heels as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Bloomington, Illinois, line 4 is next. Hello.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. My wife, a number of years ago, had a neuroma in her foot and between her up from her toe a little bit there, and quite painful. She went in to the foot clinic and had a cortisone shot, and you know, it really reduced the pain a lot. You know, went from like 9 or 10 down to about a 3. So then she thought, well, I'll go in for some more shots and just get rid of this pain. But she went in for additional shots, and it actually got worse. She ended up taking 7 or 8 shots, and she just quit because it just wasn't getting any better. Well, then she did some other things. Not sure what, but eventually it went away, or, you know, it kind of minimized. Well, now in her other foot, she's got the same thing. She's kind of got this pain, neuroma again, and she's thinking, gee, I'll just go in for one shot and then leave it alone. But why would one shot be helpful and the additional shots wouldn't reduce the pain?
Well, it's hard to say. Most of the time, the neuromas are actually a mechanical irritation to the nerve.
Uh-huh.
So if the mechanism that's causing the irritation is not addressed, then the cortisone injection helps with local inflammation in the nerve on a temporary basis. It only lasts for a few weeks, and then it's gone. If you have the irritating factor is still there irritating the nerve, then your symptoms will reoccur. Some of the problem is also the fact that since it feels much better, patients' activity level increases and they can irritate it more. So it's not uncommon to have a patient where we're given the injection, they come back and say, "Boy, you know, that was pretty helpful," and then they go back to, say, change in footwear. Again, that's one of the big things. You have to go ahead and make sure that the shoes that someone wears allows the forefoot to splay to the proper width, to give the nerve an adequate space to go ahead and lay in between those metatarsal heads. So if it's still contracted and constricted and you irritate the nerve, then you can have the symptoms just keep reoccurring. So you do have to go ahead and try to address the mechanical cause for the irritation as well as the injection to help with the local inflammation.
Yes, you use some of these toe separators, and that seems to be helpful.
The toe separators may help, but it's more of a, not necessarily in the toes, but it's farther back into the metatarsal heads themselves that cause the irritation.
More to do with maybe shoe size or the amount of room.
Shoe size and width. That's the big thing.
Yeah. All right. That's helpful.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Thank you for the call. We have a couple of other people here, and we're getting some more lined up. And again, our guest in this hour of focus is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. So we're taking questions about feet and foot care. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. And let us go to some other callers here. And next talk with someone in Eureka. Line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. I have a question about socks. I have Raynaud's. I've had it ever since I can remember. But lately, I'm in my 40s. I've noticed that I have harder and harder time keeping warm in the winter. And I was doing some research on the Internet and ran across something called far infrared therapy. And I want to know if this is snake oil or if it's something that really works. Apparently, they incorporate ceramics into the fabric of the socks or gloves, and those ceramics are supposed to reflect your own body heat back into your body. Instead of just holding it like a normal fabric would, it's supposed to reflect it back in. Does that sound real?
Sounds like a great idea, but I really don't know. I'm not familiar with the product itself, so that's something that you might have to do a little...
Well, I
did. Internet
I
research
did. I found one study that was done in Taiwan. It was published, you know, scientific study, and it did look like it was valid.
Mm-hmm.
But then the websites, there's only two websites that I can find that actually sell these products. One's a lot more expensive than the other, and they look like the kind of website that's real hyped up. And,
okay.
You know, the kind of thing that you kind of wonder.
Right.
But you've never heard of it.
No, I really haven't, so I wouldn't know.
Okay, well, thanks.
Sorry.
All right, thanks for the call. I'm sure that particularly for people who spend a lot of time outdoors, they have various kinds of exotic, you know, high-tech kind of products, and then there are the things that we've been using for,
right,
you know, who knows how long, like wool.
Right.
I know some people are very sensitive to that. So mm-hmm. maybe the idea of wool socks, just even the idea of it makes their feet itch. But they seem to really perform very well.
Yeah, especially the smart wool, which is it's a different type of coating of the fiber itself. So that seems to do a decent job. Again, the other thing as far in the Raynaud's patients, it's pretty severe because the hands and feet are affected by it, and so there's been a number of things that people use in terms of the different type of gloves and socks, et cetera. And unfortunately, there's a lot of things that are out there that you can't necessarily keep up with.
Okay. Well, we'll go on to we'll talk with someone in Crete next, line number two. Hello.
Yeah, I have a few questions. Would you recommend loafers or tie shoes for a person?
Always a tie shoe.
What about the issue of socks at night in bed? You know, it gets cold sometimes, and you put your socks on, and you have them on practically 24 hours a day. Is this a no-no?
That's fine. If your feet are cold, you can use the socks. You know, that it just normal, change the socks, obviously, and keep your feet clean and dry. But you can wear socks to bed.
And for winter boots, would you recommend rubber or any other?
Boy, it depends on what you're walking through. If you're in a lot of wet, then obviously something that's going to be rubber is important. Try to keep the inside of the shoe or boot dry, but preferably leather top and let's say rubber bottom to go ahead and let the skin breathe a little bit.
But what about a daily routine for feet? Anything special you should do on a daily basis? You know, you brush your teeth twice or three times a day. How about the feet?
Clean and dry. I think that's the important thing, and especially in the wintertime, just inspection. This when you take your socks off at night, just go ahead and take a look at your feet and make sure that there aren't any defects, cracks, et cetera, that would be coming up, so that if you see that, it's best to treat them early.
And you say Vaseline is good for chapped feet?
Vaseline is good, except making sure that you don't put it in between the toes, because that's a skin-to-skin contact area, which usually is quite moist, and you don't want to actually cause too much moisture to build up in between. So you want to keep it away from those areas.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. I want to get into a question here that came in by email, and I'll just read it to you. The listener says, could you comment on some sort of inflammation that seems to be affecting both of my daughter's big toes but none of the other toes? The skin around the nail appears red and puffy and is pulling away from the nail. The nail is slightly discolored and has not grown for the past several months. There's also pain when she's on her feet for a long period of time or when there is pressure put on the toes. There is no drainage, and the internal medicine doctor that looked at it thought it might be due to tight shoes. And she asks, is that reasonable? She says she primarily wears tennis shoes. I'm assuming that means like athletic shoes.
Right.
And she tried buying new shoes several weeks ago, and that hasn't really helped. What do you think?
Well, it's kind of sometimes hard to answer that.
Obviously.
But I think that it sounds like it could be reasonable that if somebody says to me that this nail hasn't grown for a period of months, usually nails grow at about, especially in kids, they grow at about a rate of a millimeter and a half to 2 millimeters a month. So if they haven't grown, that means that there is most likely a separation of the nail plate from the nail bed. Mm-hmm. Usually secondary to some sort of trauma to the toe. And the trauma can be something as simple as wearing a shoe that's too tight and causing ischemic changes. And actually, we get a blood blister, or a blister underneath the toenail that would address the discoloration. Uh-huh. So now we have a separation between the nail plate and the nail bed. And a new nail is always growing, but now it's growing in underneath that nail plate. So so that would kind of address the color changes, the discomfort that's there, redness, puffiness, et cetera, that could be the case. Because then sometimes you get a fluid buildup underneath and it's a chronic inflammatory type of thing. So most of the time when we take a look at those, you have to go ahead and look at them to see specifically what the problem might be. But tight shoes could be the precipitating factor. But unfortunately, then after that's going on, even changing the shoe side isn't going to help. It can help a little bit, but now we've got maybe a loose nail plate that's causing irritation as well.
So what do you do about that?
Well, we see if it's loose, you got to remove it.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of times that requires us to go ahead and remove the loose nail that's there.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Let's go on to another caller, someone who is calling from somewhere east of Dwight on our line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a corn on the bottom of my foot. What is a safe way to get rid of it? I'm leery of some of the things I see in the drugstore.
How big is that area?
How big? Oh,
just a ballpark. Is it the size of a penny, or is it the size of a eraser head, or
somewhere between a half and a quarter of an inch?
So it's pretty substantial size then.
Yeah.
So is it on a weight bearing area of the front part of your foot?
Yes.
Okay. Again, most of these problems are the skin's normal reaction to abnormal pressure over a small surface area. So it's usually the skin is the innocent bystander. It's getting pinched in between a bone in the foot and then the shoe. So in terms of getting rid of these things, we have to kind of see what the cause is. And so even just scraping the away the callus or the corn or using a medication to get rid of that isn't really going to get rid of it. It may temporarily take care of the problems, but somebody has to look at it to see what exactly is causing that particular problem. So there's really no easy answer. Most of the time that these are problems that are related to mechanical pressure on the skin and not some problem in the skin itself.
I see. Well, to temporarily get rid of it, is there something from the drugstore I could use?
As you said, the medications that are used at the drugstore are basically salicylic acid preparations, and they, boy, you know, if your circulation is good and you don't have any other problems, it can be used, but you have to be very careful to only put the material on the skin itself, because the acid doesn't know the difference between that callus material and regular skin, so it just eats through anything that you put it next to. So you don't know how well it's going to work with your skin either. So I've had some bad complications from using that type of material, but the safest thing would be to have somebody take a look at it.
Uh-huh. Okay. A podiatrist did several months ago, but he didn't really say anything. I have some heel cracks. I've been using Neutrogena Norwegian formula foot cream.
Right. That's excellent. Daily. Excellent to use.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Right, very good. Thank you. To another caller. This is someone here in Champaign, line one.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up cutting wheat and things like that. We used to use pumps like dance shoes so that we felt the bags that we were loading. And I find the modern shoe very different. The sole is large, and it's neoprene or something that, and I find that when you go into a store that does a lot of recycling of its floor wax, that you can actually trip because the shoe acts as a brake. And I find that environmentally not very sound, because the re-waxing of that floor every day is putting a lot of chemical into the environment. And it also, I suspect that people who are older could actually trip with that sort of situation. Could you say something about that?
It can be a problem with elderly patients in regards to the composition of the soles that they have and the surfaces they walk on. And you're right, sometimes you do have that adhesion between the sole and the surface, and they can trip and fall. So it is something that has to be taken care of sometimes. But in general, materials. I'm not a big neoprene fan because it does have a tendency to cause that particular condition, especially on carpeted surfaces as well. You can get that same breaking effect that takes place.
Do you go to leather?
Well, you know, there's not a lot of people that make leather anymore, and the only problem with leather is that as long as there's adequate cushion inside the shoe, because the leather itself, it doesn't offer much cushion, and in people who have a decrease in the normal fat padding in the foot, then it can be a problem of too much pressure on the bones because of the loss of fat pad.
So what material do you recommend?
Boy, I think that the Vibram is not a bad material. It offers some good cushion, but its durability and abrasion resistance sometimes is a problem. Unfortunately, there's a lot of shoes that are out there. I'm just not aware of the specifics in regards to what the name of the materials of the soles are made out of.
Is the industry aware of the sort of breaking value of their waxing? is it reasonable to suggest that across the nation that they not wax so frequently, like day by day?
I don't know. Yeah, then some people may say, well, because it's if we don't do that, then it's too slick. So then people would slip and fall versus the braking effect. So I don't know. You're between a rock and a hard place probably in some of those areas.
Yes, well, they do it so frequently. They put a remover, and then they put a back the polisher, or it's almost a plastic as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. But I think that might be something for industry to look at.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. We've got about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. We're talking about foot care, and if you have questions about your feet or those of somebody in your family, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And our guest is Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. One thing I wanted to ask you to talk about is we've had some questions about routine foot care, and I wonder about trimming and cleaning the nails on the feet, and in fact, whether if people are sometimes a little too aggressive, and depending on what it is that they're using, that they can actually do damage and cause problems or set themselves up for problems because they're too rough.
It's best to kind of leave them alone. You know, we really don't need to clean underneath the nail, things like that. Just you know, that you're right. It tends to cause more problems and inflicting damage to that connection between the nail plate and the nail bed. And as far as trimming the toenails, just trim according to the shape of the toe and the nail. Everyone says always trim straight across, but sometimes that's not appropriate because not everybody's nail bed and nail plate look that way. You know, so sometimes you have to round them off at the sides to go ahead and follow the contour of the toe. Right. So that's the more important thing. Yeah.
And can you actually run into problems with ingrown nails because of the way that you trim them?
It can be, but a majority of the time when I find patients with chronic ingrown toenails, it's more of a problem with the shape of the toenail, how it's growing versus the way that's being trimmed. Usually the patient is trying to trim out that corner because it's painful, and they don't have the ability and the equipment to go ahead and remove that portion of the nail. So I find that's one of the things that I see patients, and it's always Junior doesn't trim his nails properly. That's why he has this problem. Well, no, Junior trying to trim that out because it hurts as it grows, and it's because the nail is not misshapen and abnormal.
Yeah, all right. One is Champagne again here, line number one. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody else has asked this question, I'm sorry, but I just tuned in.
Oh, that's fine. Go ahead.
This is a particular problem that I have. I had a bunion removed from the outside of my big toe many years ago, and I did not know at the time that big toe would end up shorter, and so my second toe, which is longer, has now become pushed to the side toward the big toe. I'm sure there's a name for all of this, but anyway, the second toe is way too long now for the rest of the shape of my foot, and so I have had recommended to me that I have surgery, and that it would be, back up into the foot. And the way I look at this is, okay, this whole thing was an unintended consequence from the first one. What unintended consequence might I expect if I go ahead and have the second toe shortened and have it straightened out?
That's certainly hard for me to comment on because not having it examined you, your x-rays, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, I really don't know. If they're just going to go ahead and shorten the toe and most likely fuse the middle joint in the toe itself, to provide it with some stability, then usually just the general things in terms of any complications from some surgery, especially in that case, would be the fact that you try to fuse that particular area and it doesn't want to fuse. So you may have a incomplete fusion, a fibrous union, problems with that afterwards. But most of the time with the techniques that are used, that's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're talking about going back farther in the ball of the foot, you also may have a problem if that toe is deviated and it's kind of swinging over the top of the big toe itself. Then there may need to be more work done in the joint behind that toe, so as to stabilize things there as well. It's hard. That's hard to say.
Okay. In other words, I hate to have this done if I don't have to, but it's getting worse. So
that's the problem. And actually, the shortening of the big toe. Basically, what happens when you do the bunion procedure?
Well, I had the second toe shortened.
Right. No, I talk about the bunion procedure. It's really the first metatarsal that's shortened.
Oh, yes, I see him.
And so the toe itself isn't shortened. It's mostly this first metatarsal that's shortened, and it ends up the whole segment is shorter. But it's a common problem in bunion surgery, because obviously you have to go ahead and take some bone out to get it to swing over, and it just depends on the procedure that's done how much shortening you have.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And again, we have a couple of minutes left, certainly time for one or two callers. If you have questions, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. What you'd sort of think as your feet, what you'd like for your feet is for all the toes to kind of like sit next to each other really nicely and all sort of
nice and parallel
line
to
up
each other.
Nice and parallel. Yes. But the problem is that they don't always seem to want to do that. Are there particular things that make them want to, you know, say like one toe to kind of want to ride over on the one next to it?
Well, certainly it's true. And that's why one of these days I'd love to talk to the engineer who designed feet. Because I have
not too soon, probably you want to have that conversation.
Well, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
So why were they made that way? Because, you know, the problem is that toes are made like fingers. And there's many different joints in them. And obviously fingers, we can understand why that is the case, because of manual dexterity and movement and fine movement. But toes have those as well. And what the requirement of the toe is to be a rigid beam when you go ahead and push off of it. So to go ahead and do that, there's a tremendously complex series of soft tissue, tendon, muscle, et cetera, that has to all work in unison to make sure that those two joints in those toes are perfectly balanced, so as when you push off of them that they don't buckle. And unfortunately, over time, that system wears out. So we have then one particular group as a mechanical advantage over another, so the flexors tend to go ahead and buckle the toe, and then we have a situation where do that for a number of years, then the soft tissue contracts, and then we have a problem with the position of the toe. So it is a problem, so that it's usually just a wear and tear thing that these systems wear out over time. It's interesting that we usually see this much more in women than men. Now, why we do that, I don't know. And I'm sure the engineer will also tell me a few things that, number one, this foot was never designed to go ahead and be put in a shoe.
Certainly not a shoe that comes to a point.
Or not any shoe.
Yeah. Well, that I suppose that again that some people make this observation that feet were in fact made before shoes,
yes,
and that somehow wearing shoes just ain't natural.
Right.
And I'm sure there are some people who say, you know, I really like when I can to go barefoot, and I guess maybe, you know, there are some situations where you can do that. I'm interested in this idea that there are some people, particularly there are some runners, I guess, who use a particular kind of shoe that's pretty minimal, that I guess gives them something that's close to the experience of actually running barefoot. And, of course, there actually are some international competitive runners. I don't know how many, but there are some who actually run barefoot. I don't know how they manage that.
Because that's the other thing, and the biggest thing that we deal with is surfaces. The foot was also never designed to walk on hard, level engineered surfaces. So the surface never goes ahead and adapts to the position of the foot. So that's another issue. So when somebody does go ahead and walk barefoot, it'd be great if they're walking on barefoot on soft material that will go ahead and indent or compress on one side or another, and have a nice area that compresses till you push off of versus this hard, unrelenting surface. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case.
So what do you think about these shoes that some people run in that are said to be kind of like running?
I think that, you know, it's all well and good. It's like a natural selection where some people who want to do that and they try that shoe, and if they're very successful in it, they're fine. But other people who have other problems, especially, you know, how much pounding that they do, and if there's not the ability to go ahead and have good cushion, then they're going to run into troubles.
Yeah. The shoes that come with cork footbeds, mm-hmm. And I guess I'm thinking like, you know, Birkenstock,
right.
One of those things that they say what is supposed to happen as you walk in the shoe is that it's supposed to mold itself to some extent to what the shape of your foot and the bottom of your foot. Does that
I don't know if they really say that, because I know that material, it doesn't. It's the thing I like about it. It doesn't move. It has a kind of a somewhat of an ideal footbed that. That if I have an abnormal foot, I don't want the footbed changing to meet the abnormal position of the foot now. I want it to support the foot to keep it in a much more optimal position. So that material tends to be a little more rigid and holds and supports the foot versus compressing and molding to a foot that doesn't have the right position.
Well, I guess maybe I misunderstood the idea. Not so much that it was supposed to be cushiony, mushy, you know,
right.
But that given time, it will will sort of personalize itself to your foot.
That's
actually not
that
what
Burko cork. If you ever, I mean, it's that's the name of the material, and it's it doesn't. It's a nice material, but it doesn't really mold to the foot.
How do you feel about shoes that, again, I'm thinking that kind of shoe, and there are a lot of sandals that are made like this too, that have no. There's nothing holding the back of the foot in the shoe. There are some that maybe have a little strap that goes around the back of your ankle. But there are others that the way you hold the shoe on is by kind of gripping it with your toes.
It could be good or bad. So, it is one of those things where if you're gripping constantly that you can go ahead and overtax that particular system. But It just like anything else, if you don't have any problems with that, then it's okay.
All right. Well, I guess at that point, we're going to have to finish up for this time around. Glad we got all the calls in. Also want to say thanks very much to our guest, Dr. Robert Bourne. He's a podiatrist at Carle Clinic in Urbana. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Programming here on WILL made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, presenting Faith, Tragedy, and Joy on Saturday, January 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Flute soloist Jonathan Keeble performs Christopher Rouse's Flute Concerto. More information available at 351-9139. WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio adjacent to Campbell Hall for public telecommunication. That's it for us here on Focus. We want you to stay tuned. Coming up, we have something special for you at noon today. Live coverage of the State of the State address coming from Springfield. Celeste Quinn is here.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today, indeed, straight up at noon, we will join Illinois Public Radio for live coverage of Governor Pat Quinn's State of the State message to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. That begins at noon, and then we'll have some analysis and your phone calls in the 1 o'clock hour today of the afternoon magazine. Let's take a look now at commodity prices. In Kansas City, March wheat trading at 5.33, down 1. May, 5.42.5, down 3.25. Chicago March wheat, 5.33, down 2.75. May, actually, I'm going to skip that one. Let's go ahead to July. There's something wonky with that number for May. 5.56.5, down 2.75 for July. March corn, 3.80.5, down 12. May, 3.92, down 11. July, 4.01, down 10.25. September, 4.08, down 7. January soybeans, 9.67, down 2.5. March, 9.83.5, up 5.5. May, 9.91, up 5.25. July, 993, up 1/4. January meal, 297 even, up 160. January oil, 3805, down 21. February live cattle, 8582.5, up 37.5. April, 8970, up 47.5. January feeder cattle, 9757.5, down 22.5. March, 98 even, down 30. February lean hog, 6795, up 155. February crude, 80.28, down 51. The U.S. dollar, 76.83, down 12. The CRB index, 285.18. That is up 66. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 49. The NASDAQ up 16. The S&P 500 is up 7 points. This is WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3. Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, sunny, highs ranging from around 30 in northeastern Indiana to 44 in southwestern Illinois. In Champaign-Urbana this afternoon, sunny and breezy, the high 33, the wind from the south at 12 to 24 miles per hour and gusty. At noon Central Time, 30 degrees in Urbana. Up next, live coverage of the State of the State Address from Springfield. Stay tuned.